Produced by women about women, Powerful Women Let's Talk is a series of interviews with women who are trailblazers and have helped shape our world, transforming who we are and how we live.
Hello, everyone. Time for Powerful Women Let's Talk. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Jennifer Moss. It's a pleasure to bring you today's powerful woman, Tara Adey. Tara is the Director of Innovation and Advocacy at Safe Haven Ministries. She's also the co-chair of the Domestic Violence Community Coordinated Response Team. Tara is guided by 12 years of experience across a wide array of roles in the domestic and sexual violence field. She has worked locally in nonprofits, in higher education, and at the national level to create lasting change to prevent violence and enhance system response to domestic and sexual violence. Tara is a relational leader that believes in the collective power of community to solve complex issues and even drive change. So glad to welcome you here today, Tara Adey, to Powerful Women Let's Talk.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Yep. So, you know, a little bit more about you, Tara, before we dive in. Under your leadership as the Director of Innovation and Advocacy, Safe Haven Ministries has launched numerous training and education initiatives, basically focused on empowering people and systems to reduce violence in their communities. And recently, in your role as the co-chair of the Domestic Violence Community Coordinated Response Team, you led Kent County's first domestic violence homicide review, which acts as a tool basically to improve system response to domestic violence. So again, Tara, we thank you for joining us. You know, we see powerful women in so many areas in our community and nationally, and you are making quite the dramatic change in the areas of advocacy and preventing violence, both domestic and sexual violence against women. This is incredible and very important work, and I imagine it's quite the journey, albeit probably sometimes a difficult one at times. Tell us a bit more about the work that you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. You know, it's hard work, but it's really rewarding work. I'll be honest, it wasn't what I thought I was going to do, you know, when I first started going to school, but I think what pulled me in and really grounds me in this work is the stories of folks that I've had the honor to walk alongside as they try to leave abusive relationships, and then community members that are just working so hard to ensure that they can live in a healthy community. And so a lot of the work that I do is helping to bring people together to look at, you know, why is our community so impacted by violence? We are talking about it a bit more as a community now. I think it's, you know, it's been in the media a lot lately. But it's asking those tough questions of, like, how did we get here? And what can we do to truly make sustainable change? Because we can't keep going at the rate that we're going because people are losing their lives.
And it's something that a lot of people don't want to talk about, right? I mean, that's been one of the hurdles.
Yeah. Yeah, I think when I was growing up, when I was going, you know, to school, this wasn't a topic that people talked about. You know, when I first started my career at Safe Haven, a lot of what I was doing was going into classrooms and talking to middle schoolers and high schoolers about what is a healthy relationship, what does a healthy relationship look like? And to be frank, those were not conversations that were happening in my community, in my school. And I think that became a really big why. You know, I first stepped foot at Safe Haven as a volunteer thinking, to be honest, I didn't know much about Grand Rapids. I Googled places to volunteer, and Safe Haven popped up, and I started folding laundry and making meals with residential clients, and it really pulled me in because it got me thinking, like, why wasn't this a part of my narrative? Why wasn't this a part of something that people talked about? And it really...
Why didn't you know about it?
Why didn't I know about it? Why is it so hard to talk about it? And is there a way to go about doing this work where it's going to be hard to discuss? It's going to be hard to name because it means looking within our own lives and acknowledging that there's a lot of hurt and pain. But how can we do that in a way that's honoring to survivors and still creates accountability that we've got to do better as a community?
I don't know if you have stats off the top of your head, but you work at Safe Haven Ministries. A, tell us what Safe Haven does for those who don't know, and then maybe some stats of how bad the violence can be in our community that people are just not aware.
Yeah, so Safe Haven is a comprehensive domestic violence and human trafficking organization. We shelter survivors that are leaving, that are in dangerous relationships and situations, but we also offer services like support group, court advocacy, legal advocacy, mm-hmm. and a lot of the work that I do with my team is around preventing violence, disrupting, you know, systems that make it easy for abusers to get away with their violence. And that's a lot of the work that I also do with the Kent County Domestic Violence Community Coordinated Response Team. And when you talk about the prevalence of violence in our community, the statistics are alarming. 1 in 4 women and 1 in 9 men will experience some form of domestic violence at least once in their lifetime. And like, let that sink in for a moment.
1 in 4
for women.
And 1 in 9 for men.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't even put men in that category.
Right. And I think that's part of our work at Safe Haven is to really look at how far-reaching this is. We know that 1 in 3 adolescents will experience abuse in their own dating relationships before they graduate high school. Mm-hmm. This, you know, issue disproportionately impacts the LGBTQ community. It disproportionately impacts communities of color. We don't have a lot of rich data for that because we don't often pay attention, but we know that the numbers and the experiences are devastating.
And you are calling attention to that. And recently, as mentioned, you did lead Kent County's first domestic homicide review. This is a big deal, an important tool as against domestic violence and as we look at it further and try to prevent, right? I mean, this that homicide review. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I think you often, you know, talk about women that inspire you. And for me, it is Katie Johnson, the mother of Dylan, who she lost her son to domestic violence. I'm sorry, and I misspoke on her name. Katie Thebo, Katie Hall, she goes by. And, you know, she came to us and she said, something's got to be done, right? We can't just let this pass by and not learn from it. And so the bravery that she had, even in the midst of her grief, to come forward and say, we've got to do something different. And so a group of us came together through the CCRT and engaged in this review process and really found 4 key recommendations, a tool for this community, hopefully to listen and pay attention to and learn from so that Dylan's death doesn't happen for nothing.
Absolutely. And that's great work that you all are doing. And every step counts. And you are making great headway there. So congratulations on that. I know it's difficult and it's a hard subject matter, but you're making strides. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And for folks in the community to know about that. Again, work very critical. I talk to so many women on Powerful Women Let's Talk, and we look at what women do, but also how they got there. So as we talk about powerful women, have there been any barriers that perhaps you encountered along your journey along the way before, you know, making those strides? Have you encountered that?
You know, I started my career really young. And so sometimes the greatest barriers were, I think, allowing myself to get in my own way. Mm-hmm. You know, when I started leading at Safe Haven, you know, I was supervising a team of really strong leaders, really strong, you know, advocates who had more experience than I had time on this earth. And I think as a woman, you can sometimes get in your head and think, you know, I'm not good enough. I'm not qualified enough to be in this role.
We can be our own barrier.
We can. And I think a shift for me happened when I was able to really acknowledge it, like, leading isn't this, I'm up at in front, like charging all of the things. It's looking, you know, to the folks all around you and being able to see, like, collectively as a team, that's where the work gets done. And it's particularly in this work, the folks behind the scenes are often the ones, you know, making all of the change. They're the ones that sit with clients every single day and hear their stories and call and advocate and just keep doing it day in and day out. And so for me, it was like, I didn't have to know all the answers. I didn't have to have all of the expertise because I could rely on an amazing team and colleagues and mentors in this work and in this field to also help me lead. And so I think recognizing that and acknowledging that was just huge for me.
Yeah. Move that little barrier out of the way yourself.
It's
like you've got to and look at it differently. You know, and again, on this road or our journey in life, you know, we want to move forward. A lot of us women say it took a while to get there, facing those obstacles, those challenges, barriers, and the like. But one of the things too, like you talked about yourself being the bearer, what did it take for you to find your voice though, you know, to be able to stand and say and be comfortable in your own skin?
Yeah, I think I'm still discovering that, if I'm being quite honest. But I think for me, it was, even as this was a huge season for me, like coming out of a pandemic, coming out of a time when we as a community were just so isolated and separated, mm-hmm. and being able to have the honor to do this homicide review was huge. It was really hard work, but it kind of is affirming that like there is meaning and there is purpose, and I have the ability to impact change in my community, and that self-critic, that inner critic, it's okay to turn the volume down on that, mm-hmm. and it's okay to say like I'm doing really good work, and my community's doing really good work, and that's enough.
Yep, a positive affirmation. It's okay to say, you know what, we're making a change here. We're doing something good.
Yeah.
And it's okay. And it's not braggadocious. It's not any of that. Yeah. It's a good thing. So tell me, as you work with people, what are some of the leadership traits that you kind of rely on or that you look to see in people? Because you do work in teams. You said you do all have different jobs and you're working in different segments advocating for those who are in need. So what are some of the traits that you look for?
I think a willingness to be curious and to listen. I think the folks that we sit around the table with in community have so many different life experiences, so many different viewpoints and ideas around like what things should look like and how you should go about creating that change. And so the strong leaders that I see are often those that are willing to sit and listen first, mm-hmm. to hear and to realize that even if we have these drastically different ideas, philosophies, that if we're willing to just authentically look at the person across from us as also another human trying to do this really tough work, that often there can be some common ground found. And it's not in a way to kind of superficially silver line things like everything's going to be okay, mm-hmm. we're in this together. But I think it's that authentic realization that, you know, to be a good leader means to acknowledge the human in all of us. Mm-hmm. And I think that
no one's perfect.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You have a political science and journalism degree.
Yeah.
A master's in public education. What led you you knew that was coming. What led you to do the work that you do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my first job out of college was as a reporter. Spoiler alert, I am not meant to be a sports reporter. It is not in me.
That was not your thing.
That was not my thing. But working in a newsroom with majority men, interviewing sports coaches, mm-hmm. which is also predominantly men, and experiencing just a lot of really uncomfortable and unjust experiences, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and times when I would even try to advocate for that change with my colleagues. Like I remember one moment in particular where a colleague was making fun of the way that a coach talked, and I remember like going to him and saying like, that's not okay. Like that I didn't have the language at the time, but it was a microaggression, and where I worked wasn't supportive of that. You know, I they kind of just said like, you know, keep the peace, like, mm-hmm. it's not really something that we're going to do anything about. And I think that was like the very start of me realizing that I went into journalism because I wanted to create change.
Yeah.
I wanted to be a voice to say like, look at what's happening here. Shine light on it. Bring awareness to it. And I think for me, it was just this slight pivot that journalism gave me all the skills. Mm-hmm. It gave me the communication skills. It gave me the ability to do deep research, you know. But sports reporting wasn't going to get me to that goal. Right. It built some resilience in me. It taught me that, you know, you're going to get people that say no, but make that part of your foundation to be even a stronger advocate.
Gave you all the fundamentals you need, basically, to do what you are doing today. Because a lot of those components are in there just in a different, you know, schematic thing.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at it, it's like, okay, I can apply this, I can apply that. But you're doing different work.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. Let's talk about your personal side. What do you like to do to relax, maybe have fun with family and friends? I think I read you like to cook.
I love to cook. I can sometimes be a bit awkward in social settings. And if people are listening to this and know me, they'll probably agree. But food for me can be a way of telling stories and learning about people, learning about who they are. For me, it's so exciting to make a meal and talk about it and share in that meal with people. So I'm always, you know, I'm always up for trying something new. I'm a vegan, so I collect cookbooks. And so folks will often say, like, well, why do you have all these meat cookbooks and dairy cookbooks? And I'm like, because I like to take them and then think, like, how can I make them vegan?
If you want to make that change.
Yeah.
You're creating change in a lot of different things, right? I just saw that. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe a little.
A little bit, huh? Okay, my favorite question of all the time, every time I talk to somebody, is like, what makes you laugh? What do you find your joy in?
Yeah. For me right now, it is... my partner and I are fostering dogs for the Kent County Animal Shelter. We started doing that in the middle of the pandemic. And man, dogs are like, I wasn't a dog person until I started fostering, but they don't judge you. They're goofy. They make you laugh. They get you outdoors. You know, this morning I looked outside and my partner was out there with an umbrella walking around over our foster dog Muffin so that she wouldn't get wet going to the bathroom.
Wow.
So that made me laugh this morning.
Yeah.
But I think it's like reminding myself that, you know, domestic violence, sexual violence work is really heavy and it's really hard. Mm-hmm. And if I want to sustain myself in this work, I have to have those other things that bring me joy in sometimes the most simple and purest ways. Mm-hmm. And laughing at yourself as you, you know, try to get this sweater vest on a dog for a photo to get them adopted, like, that makes me laugh. That brings me joy.
You know, and I find it doesn't matter how big or small it is, if you can laugh, especially when you have fun and you have that gut-wrenching laugh, it's like really good for the soul.
Yeah.
I mean, they say that, but I think it's really true.
Yeah.
It just does something for you. So, you know, we've got a lot happening in this world that we live in today. People are often looking for that encouragement, that encouraging word, one little thing. Do you have, by chance, any motto, any encouraging words that you may use for yourself or for others as you advocate for those folks?
Yeah, I think one of the things for me lately has been to slow down, to listen, to observe. And it's okay to take a beat before you have to know the answer. And so that's been huge for me.
Awesome. Awesome. Tara Ade, thank you so much for joining us today. I really enjoyed this conversation. Yeah. Good luck in all the work that you're doing. You're doing some marvelous things and some wonderful help for our community. So we really do appreciate you. So nice to chat with you. And thank you, too, for joining us for yet another edition of Powerful Women Let's Talk. I'm Jennifer Moss. Do enjoy your day.
Produced by women, about women. These powerful podcasts focus on powerful women and how their strength transforms who we are and how we live. Want to hear more Powerful Women Let's Talk? Get additional interviews at wgvu.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate and subscribe. Powerful Women Let's Talk is produced by WGVU at the Meyer Public Broadcast Center at Grand Valley State University. The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of WGVU, its underwriters, or Grand Valley State University.